In my family, education means cultivating wisdom and virtue by teaching what is good, true, and beautiful. Memoria Press makes this type of education possible with their classical Christian curriculum. Characterized by simplicity, quality, and affordability, Memoria Press gives my children a rich classical education. Get $5 off your next order by using the coupon code LPR. For more information, go to memoriapress.com. Memoria Press, saving Western civilization one student at a time.
I would say that as an ardent practicing Catholic, this is an issue that I have studied for a long time. And what I know is over the centuries, the doctors of the church have not been able to make that definition. St. Augustine said at 3 months. You don't know. And so I don't think anybody can tell you when life begins, human life begins. As I say, Catholic Church for centuries has been discussing this, and there are those who've decided...
The Catholic Church at the moment feels very strongly that it begins at the point of conception.
And this is like maybe 50 years or something like that. So again, over the history of the church, this is an issue of controversy.
That's House Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi speaking on Meet the Press back in 2008, offering her version of the history of the Roman Catholic Church's position on abortion, saying there that, well, you know, for most of the history of the church, it's been an open question when human life begins. It's only in the last 50 years that people have gotten persnickety about this thing. Now, she's also been quoted in the New York Times recently in a story on her, on the papal visit and on abortion, that her disagreement with the Pope and with her church, the Roman Catholic Church, on the issue of abortion really isn't a disagreement over something essential. It's just a minor point in the church's teaching. And as she says, there may be even a more recent point in the church's teaching. How should Roman Catholics respond to that? Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in live this Tuesday afternoon. It is the 22nd of September. Dr. Frank Beckwith will join us here to respond to the New York Times story about Nancy Pelosi abortion and the papal visit. And a little bit later, we'll be doing our regular series with Pastor Brian Wolf Miller, responding to an evangelical cliche today: God doesn't create robots. What's behind that? You've heard people say that. God doesn't want robots. He wants people with free will. So he gave us a free will, so we could decide for him, and maybe even our decision keeps us in our relationship with him. How do we respond to that? Pastor Brian Wolf Miller will help us with that in about a half hour here on Issues Etc. Dr. Frank Beckwith is a regular guest. He joins us to respond to the New York Times story about Nancy Pelosi, abortion, and the papal visit, even as the Pope is making his way from the airport to his various stops around the U.S. Dr. Frank Beckwith is professor of philosophy and church-state studies at Baylor University in Waco, Texas, and a practicing Roman Catholic. Dr. Beckwith, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Well, thanks for having me.
How do you respond to Speaker Pelosi's contention that for most of the church's history, the question of when does human life begin has been kind of an open question, and that her disagreement with the Pope and her church on the issue of abortion is really just kind of a minor point upon which she agrees? She agrees with most, but just a few minor points surrounding women's reproductive health. How
well,
do you respond?
There's a couple of things just to say about the first comment that she made. She's confusing the church's unequivocal opposition to abortion from the very beginning. In fact, it's a history that all Christians share, going all the way back to the earliest post-apostolic document, the Didache, which actually prohibits abortion. It's always been part of the universal Christian church and the Catholic Church in particular. But she's confused with the other question, which is, when does a developing human being acquire a rational soul, which is a different question, and it's not the same. It's not that she's confusing the two things. So, yes, there was a period of time where Catholic thinkers, as well as other Christian thinkers, disagreed when precisely the developing human being acquired a rational soul. But everybody agreed that abortion was wrong. Now it turns out the reason why some of these ancient thinkers, such as Augustine, and medieval thinkers like Aquinas, held the views that they did was because they had a mistaken view of biology. And in the 19th century, when we learned a lot about when life begins in terms of the science, guess what? The church still opposed abortion, but now it said we are on a firm foundation to say that the child in the womb from the very beginning is in fact a member of the human community because it remains identical to itself from the very beginning and has within it certain powers that are ordered towards certain perfections that human beings have by nature. So Pelosi is you know, and I got to say this right. She's partly right, but she's confusing two issues. One, a kind of interesting metaphysical question about when a human being acquires a rational soul, but that's not the same as the question of whether abortion is wrong. And the church has always been unequivocally against abortion.
And what about her contention that her disagreement with the Pope and with her church is a minor one? It's a minor point in the vast teachings of the Roman Catholic Church. How would you respond to that?
It's not a minor disagreement at all. It's a profoundly important disagreement because of the fact that the Church's social teachings, which we've received scores of encyclicals on this from the late 19th century to the present, obviously not all of them dealing with the issue of abortion, but whenever that issue is dealt with, what the Church does, it ties its view of the unborn child and abortion to the ancient Christian view of the nature of the human person. And it's deep. It's just like the Church's view on marriage. It is simply it's incomprehensible to think that somehow you can take the view that the body of Christ is the Church is Christ's bride, and to somehow say that that has no implication on the nature of marriage. I mean, think about something like the Incarnation. This is why the Christians from the beginning have opposed abortion. The idea that one could actually kill the Christ child before he is even born is incomprehensible. So I think what she's doing here is suggesting that, look, Catholics sometimes disagree with what the Church teaches, and she's certainly right about that. But what she doesn't explain is, or doesn't seem to understand, is that certain teachings are more important than others, and there are certain teachings are more central to the Church's view of the nature of the human person, our relationship with God, and so forth, and let's say policy on whether the United States in 1975 should give back the Panama Canal. There are certainly disagreements that Catholics can legitimately have with their church, but it depends on the nature of the disagreement, the subject under consideration. In some cases, the Pope or a cardinal or a bishop may give an opinion about a particular policy, but that doesn't make it official church teaching.
So I remember a conversation years ago with the late Father Richard John Newhouse, where he simply said that for the church, the issue of life, and especially that surrounding both beginning and end of life, is in the moral theology of the church a question of a different and higher caliber than all others. That was his contention. Do you agree?
That I absolutely agree, and it is again, you know, if you think of Catholic teaching as a kind of organism, that is, there are different parts and they all work in concert for the good of the whole. So you can't simply take one teaching and remove it and treat it as if, especially if it's central to the Church's view of the nature of human beings. I'm kind of astonished at Nancy Pelosi. I mean, it is amazing to me because she's an intelligent woman, and I suspect she knows all this.
What are your expectations, your hopes for Pope Francis's visit to the U.S.?
You know, I would like to, I know he's addressing Congress. I believe, is he addressing it today? I forget. But he will be addressing a joint session of Congress, which will be the first time in American history that a pope will be doing that. I hope that when he gives this address, that he articulates the Christian view of the human person in such a way that everybody feels uncomfortable. And I mean, you know, there are people on both sides of the aisle who, you know, in different ways, I think, reject that teaching. And I think the Pope would do well not to try, and I don't think he's like this, but that he articulate with clarity and confidence those teachings. And, you know, I also think he should address something that, and I'm hoping he addresses this, and that is the crisis that is going on right now in Europe, and obviously we are, as a nation, trying to do our best to remedy this, and the number of refugees from Muslim nations, mostly Christian refugees, being forced out of their homeland. And I hope he says these words, there is a genocide internationally against Christians. And I think if the Pope speaks those words at the joint session of Congress, it will cause an earthquake, because when a head of state that is part of the United Nations utters the word genocide, certain types of legal actions are triggered. And I think if the Pope were to do that, I think it would not only, you know, be a good thing for those people that need help, it would be good for us. I think many Christians in the United States are ignoring what's going on, and it's a real shame, because these people are part of the body of Christ and they need our help.
On the issue of natural marriage, do you expect the Pope to address that either in one of his public statements? He also will address the General Assembly of the UN, but especially the joint session of Congress.
You know, I'm not sure. I mean, I think he will mention it. I don't think, you know, here again, I have no inside information. I'm just, you know, speculating. I suspect, you know, he's been fully briefed about what's going on in the United States about this and other issues, and I would be surprised if he didn't say anything. I do think just like his predecessors, I think he's going to tie the Christian view of marriage to other concerns. So I wouldn't be surprised if he said something like this, that the idea that we should protect nature and that there's an ecology in nature is also, it's not just simply of the natural world, but it's also true of the human world. And part of that ecology concerning human beings is that we are ordered towards a particular view of marriage, and it's important for our human ecology that that institution be protected and preserved. So I wouldn't be surprised if he spoke of it, but tied it, again, tying it to sort of a way of presenting it that doesn't make it sound like a partisan issue, but that's something that is tightly tethered to an overall Christian ethic.
What do you make of, as a practicing Roman Catholic and as someone who watches politics carefully in our country, what do you make of the way that the media has covered Pope Francis, not just his visit here, but from the time of his elevation? He's been covered in a certain way as kind of the progressive, the man who will reshape worldwide Roman Catholicism, one who will put to flight all of these pesky Roman Catholics in the U.S. that are concerned about abortion and marriage and other issues. What do you make of it?
Yeah, I think, you know, it's difficult to figure it out, because there's really nothing that Francis has said, even on the issues of the environment, that differ from his predecessors. That is, you can find very similar statements made by Benedict and John Paul II. I think the difference is this. I think that culturally, Pope Francis comes from, he comes from Latin America, and there's a different style of presentation than, let's say, one may find in John Paul II or Benedict, who were largely cosmopolitan Europeans, right? So the other part of it is, I don't want to sound like a conspiracy theorist or anything, but I sometimes wonder whether there is a kind of view in the media that, this guy is a, you know, he's not like John Paul II or Benedict. He's a kind of novice, and maybe if we sort of twist his words this way, And he wants to remain popular. He's going to sort of shift the church in that direction. I mean, it's difficult to figure out. The other is that I think a lot of media people just don't know much about religion, and they don't know much about not only Catholicism but any other religion. And so they tend to look at these issues through the lens of American politics, and that is looking everything as right and left. And the other is I think there's a kind of prejudice and bias against more traditional Catholics, like usually associated with Pope Benedict. And so, you know, anytime the prejudice assumes that, well, people like Benedict are, you know, they're kind of mean, nasty traditionalists who lack mercy, and then all of a sudden we have a pope now talking about mercy, so there must be a shift. Well, the reality is you get back and read Benedict. I actually did this to a friend of mine. I included a quote from Benedict in an email, and I asked him, I didn't say who it was, I said, the pope said this, and he said, I love Francis. I said, Benedict said that. And so, you know, I think there's a lot of reasons, but I think all those contribute to that that image.
Let's talk a little bit about returning to the issue of Nancy Pelosi and pro-choice Catholic politicians like her. How frustrated are faithful Roman Catholics with these kind of politicians and leaders?
I think it's frustrating. And I think what makes it even more frustrating is that I don't think there's enough leadership in the church responding to this sort of thing. I mean, there are some outstanding, courageous bishops. I think of the Archbishop of San Francisco, the Archbishop of Philadelphia, you know, who in fact will come out and correct these politicians. But you know, a lot it just doesn't happen as often. Several reasons for that, one of which may be that, you know, strategically the bishops may think that it may be a better idea not to do that. But I think it's for those of us that are in the pro-life movement who have been involved for quite some time, it is frustrating. And part of the problem, of course, is the secular media, which doesn't at all ask the right sorts of questions when they have a chance to interview these people on these issues. So, you know, going back to the Pelosi interview, I'm sort of surprised that, well, maybe I shouldn't be surprised that the interviewer didn't even, you know, wasn't prepared for that kind of answer. And of course, it shouldn't have surprised him.
Do you expect, or hope at least, that Pope Francis would make at least a subtle reference to the fact that he's addressing a group that is, well, there are, of all religious groups in the House and Senate, Roman Catholics are the majority.
Yeah, I didn't know that.
do you think he will be cognizant of that and gently address them as Catholics to address their deviations from the churches?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I mean, of course, if I were writing his speech, I would do that. But I'm not sure. You know, I think, if I were to put myself in the place of the Pope and think, you know, about the global church, I may not want to do that. You know, especially if on the forefront of his mind were the what's going on in the Middle East and elsewhere. So, you know, again, I don't know. I mean, it's difficult to speculate. And I would love for him to do that, and he may very well do that. He has surprised us on occasion. I think in his homily in Cuba this morning, if I've read it correctly, he talked about people. He put down dictators and failed to mention at all anything in Cuba after 1958. Now that takes a lot of guts. So, you know, who knows what he could say here in the United States?
Kind of in that vein of you writing his speech for him, if you were by chance hired as a consultant to the Pope for his U.S. visit on how to deal with the American media, what would you tell him with about a minute here, Dr. Beckwith?
You know, I would tell him to do what Cardinal George did 3 years ago on the day that Pope Francis was elected. He was asked by a correspondent from NBC, "Well, is this a liberal or a conservative pope, and Cardinal George said, I don't even know how to answer that question. Those aren't theological categories. And his point was that the Catholic view, the Catholic positions on issues is driven by its view of the nature of human beings, not on contemporary politics. And I think if I were consulting the Pope, I would have him stress the connection between the Church's views on abortion, euthanasia, and so forth, with its views on the relationship between the state and its obligation to the poor and so forth, as one holistic teaching.
Dr. Frank Beckwith is professor of philosophy and church-state studies at Baylor University in Waco, Texas. He's a practicing Roman Catholic. You will find a link to his website at issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Dr. Beckwith, thank you very much for your time.
Oh, thanks for having me.
When we come back, we're going to be responding to an evangelical cliche. This one, God doesn't want robots. You've probably heard that one. Pastor Brian Wolfmiller, pastor of Hope Lutheran Church in Aurora, Colorado, and editor of Around the Word Devotions, will be our guest.
You might wonder, is it possible for my child with special needs to receive a rich classical Christian education? Issues Etc. guest Cheryl Swope answers yes. With the Simply Classical curriculum created by Cheryl and published by Memoria Press, there's no reason to withhold a beautiful education from any struggling student. Visit classicalspecialneeds.com and save $5 on your next order by using the coupon code LPR. Classicalspecialneeds.com.
What kind of hostility do Christians encounter? When does hostility become persecution? And how can we respond? The Issues Etc. Book of the Month is Standing Firm, A Christian Response to Hostility and Persecution. You can browse before you buy at issuesetc.org or call Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040. Standing Firm is written by scientist Dr. Jesse Yao. The Issues Etc. Book of the Month, Standing Firm, A Christian Response to Hostility and Persecution.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Our cities are some of the greatest mission fields on the planet, but the footprint of the church is shrinking. We dare not shrink from our cities. Christ is needed now in our urban areas. From chaos, turmoil, decay, death, and destruction, Jesus brings peace, hope, resurrection, eternal life, and rebuilding. And you can help by being a hero for the city. Find out how at lcms.org/citymission or on Facebook at LCMS City Mission. Every city needs a hero. Capes and helmets not required.
The substitute organist service has been a great blessing for our worship life here at Christ the King Lutheran in Riverview, Florida.
Pastor Kevin Yoakum on the substitute organist service.
Now our organ plays rich liturgical music every single Sunday, and it's very affordable. You pick the hymns, you pick the liturgies. It's very simple. Just know when to push play.
You can find out more about the substitute organist service at churchmusicsolutions.com. churchmusicsolutions.com.